Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello, I'm Mark Goodyear. Welcome to the Classic Album Club podcast. In this episode, we revisit The Kinks' idiosyncratic masterpiece. The Kinks are the Village Green Preservation Society.
A lot of the songs are about characters we grew up with. It was homage to our past, really, growing up.
I felt more supportive of Ray. I think together we all had a kind of a unified kind of vibe about the thing more, probably, than with Shell at the helm.
At the time, it wasn't popular because it wasn't the modern trend at the time. You know, as I was probably still into psychedelia or something. But with time, eventually people sort of rediscovered it and it's become popular again.
We'll be hearing from songwriter and lead singer Ray Davis, his brother, guitarist Dave Davis, and drummer Mick Avery about the lasting impact the album continues to have.
It's one of the top records of that period, made by the Kinks. We went on, when we got back to America eventually, we took a different turn in our music. But I think it summarises a point in our career very well. And the tribute to the original band.
Yeah, I think it was a good product at the time, and it stood test of time. We just went where the music took us, really.
It's kind of like a celebration of small. You know, we became so drawn into this mechanised age and robotic age, and technology is moving so fast, we think we can keep up with it, but can we?
First, let's hear from Ray on how the tumultuous few years leading up to the recording of the album affected the band creatively and emotionally.
Well, originally, I was at my wit's end because we'd been banned in America. I would have liked to have gone and had a whale of a time, to tell you the truth, but I can't tell you the biggest market in the world and the music that inspired us. And being banned from playing there is really a lot to take on. And we had lawsuits between our agents. And I wanted to make something beautiful out of all this, about places and people I cared about. I wanted to make something positive out of something that was a bad time. We were written off as a band, really, '68. We only had 4 singles in the charts that year, so we has been. American music was the source of our inspiration to begin with. And we had that denied because of the ban. I never thought I'd tour America again, so I sort of lost myself in Britishness, tried to celebrate the music that where I came from. So it was time to step back, and I was getting old. I was 23, and I had a young family, you know, 2 daughters.
Guitarist Dave Davis.
We got banned from America, although it's a very productive time for the Kinks, studio-wise, and we were still doing shows and stuff. It was obviously tainted by the ban from touring America. And Ray had these ideas. And we were very close at that time. And I was actually glad to be back in England. So me kids, me family and all that stuff. So it was a very warm kind of time. The music, the songs Ray was writing were very family-ish. Because some of the characters were tossed around in Ray's imagination were based on people we knew and met, maybe family members with different hairdo and different attitude.
Drummer Mick Avery.
I think we took a different turn then. We used to work more together and in preparation. I rehearse more and go through the songs and experiment and different feels and different sounds, etc. So we, you know, it was more involved, I think, by then, rather than just going in the studio and doing it as quick as possible. Ray was thinking, I think, of doing the album for himself, you know, doing it on that theme, Village Green theme. But when it came down to what direction we were going in. That'd be nice, you know, everyone agreed that was a good sentiment, you know. It's a bit of nostalgia, and which he was writing about, you know, quite a lot then. And but instead of separate songs, we did a theme. So that was probably the first theme album we did. You know, we rehearsed it, and I think probably the band put a little bit more of the arrangement to it as well, you know, because we rehearsed, and you know, Ray used to record us on a cassette just to see how it sounded, you know, or rough idea on what we were good at playing together, and you know, so we're bouncing off each other a bit then. It's mainly Ray that put the words and songs together, so it was something that was close to him, and he found something that he could write about that was, you know, interesting for him, and you know, had a lot of good content in it, because his words are very important, and that does get through to people, whereas something like "You Really Got Me," they like it because of the sound and the urgency of it. But with something like "A Village Green," it's like painting a picture. It's more of an artistic view of things.
A lot of the songs are about characters we grew up with, you know, people in the neighbourhood, so Dave Filkler, and Quaife as well. Pete Quaife is a Muswell Hill boy. It was homage to our past, really, growing up.
The backstory of a lot of Kinks music is his family. I mean, it's not always apparent, but a lot of inspiration been drawn from where we're from and how we grow up and the people that we met and the characters we met. So Ray's a very visual writer, as am I. You tend to see things forming like a film script when you get ideas and get character, and you start developing these characters. I think Village Green is very much like that. It's like being on a film set when you think of these people. Like Wicked Annabella, could have just been like a grouchy old lady that lived down the road who didn't like the kids going on her lawn. You know, it, like these characters grow into your imagination, so it's a very interesting time. But there was obviously that feeling after the explosion, the excitement of the 60s stuff from 62 onwards. It was like we were on a roller coaster ride. All of a sudden, the youth or the young people or the young musicians even were thinking in terms of like anything that's old goes, embrace the future without really thinking about it. Well, I think Village Green is very much about preserving ideas or keeping the good ones, you know, throw out things that don't work but keep the ones that do work and integrate it with what's coming up.
I don't like to use the word nostalgia. It's more like time travel. Because I live in now, past, present and future are all part of my life. What I just said is the past. And I always look to be a wholeness. Everything's a now moment. Very psychological. I refer to the past tense a lot. People take pictures of each other to prove they really existed. But they exist. It's the value of things like photographs with it. In the age of iPhones, how cheapened the image is.
From the start, it was clear that this album was going to be very different to anything the Kinks had previously released. Producer Shel Talmy had left, and instead of finding a replacement, Ray stepped in.
Well, I didn't have a producer's hat. We'd had a very, very good producer, Shel Talmy, who worked with us. The good thing about Shel, though, is he never imposed his own ideas. He just recorded what was there. And I tried to keep that same. I was adamant about certain things. Dave had a good expression for me, whether he used it or not. Ray's not a perfectionist. He just doesn't know where to stop. So it never really thought to me just to be a producer. I just wanted it to sound the way I wanted it to sound.
In a way, I thought it was. I felt more supportive of Ray. I think together we all had a unified kind of vibe about the thing more probably than with Shel at the helm. I mean, I love working with Shel anyway because it is nice to have someone just to vibe it up there, you know, if you feel a little unsure. Of course, it's always important to have those kind of people around you, but the music sounded very different. Really, and very enjoyable and very fairly new in a way. It's kind of reflecting on loss. And, yeah, we all go through those feelings. We have to move on, integrate what we have and our feelings and what's coming up.
Because Ray's part of the band, he understood producers that not musicians, they don't really always understand the playing point, and they let things go sometimes that you're not really happy with, and they go, that's all right, don't worry about that. But you do worry about it because, you know, if it's a little fluff or something that you're not quite happy with, they want to move on.
Once we broke the back of what I wanted, we had a brief rehearsal at my house in the front room. And we went straight in the studio. We didn't have the luxury of extensive studio time here. In a day, 9-hour day, we'd probably have to cut 3 or 4 tracks. So it's unheard of now. I think it's a band that's been through a tumultuous time for the past 4 years of their lives, going from nobodies to, you know, Mick Avery came to his audition dressed in his Boy Scout outfit. So it's a complete turnaround in their lives, to becoming playing massive auditoriums, to becoming coming home and resting and thinking, where are we from? It's also a way of staying in touch with where we were from, because it's quite heady times.
The album is filled with a host of colourful characters, some of which came directly from the people around where they lived.
Although they're very much Ray's songs, I think they're very infused with love and feelings for these characters that became real because we kind of knew who they were but didn't know who they were. So someone said to me, it was like being reintroduced to old family members. They exist in this sort of imaginary world. Yeah, I think it's a wonderful, very enjoyable album on many levels.
Sometimes they change the names, but a real story behind it. A lot of his songs are pointed at someone, you know, maybe a fictitious person or a real person that, with a name that is made up, or, you know, like something like Lola as a character is seen, but it probably wasn't called Lola. Because Ray steered the ship because he wrote the songs, so whatever theme he could think of. And his brother-in-law went to Australia, and we did this album called Arthur after Village Green. You know, that was about a person really, and the experiences of going to Australia, and you know, all the things that went with it, and leaving England, and so that was really a theme.
Johnny Thunders. Me and Ray got conflicting ideas of who it's based on. And of course, it's Ray's song, so it's based on the guy he thought about. But I had a different idea about it. There was a biker, a young guy who was a bit older than us. He was a loner, this guy. He used to do this thing of showing off. There's a top of Muswell Hill. There's a roundabout. We used to call it the Pentagon. This guy, I can't remember his name, but he used to ride on this roundabout really fast and trying to go faster than the next one. And story has it that one day his footrest got caught on the road and tumbled down Muswell Hill. But Ray's got a different view. But maybe there's two Johnny Thunders.
I believe the song Wicked Annabella was recorded on the... written, I changed the bridge at the last minute. That's the middle eight section. I wanted it to go to a jovial, hippity-hop type thing. Not hip-hop, but hippity-hop, jovial bridge. But instead, Dave was playing powerful guitar, and I wrote something on the spot which suited his guitar playing. Annabella is quite a devious seductress. I think it would be nice to sacrifice my brother to her. And he willingly accept.
The actual... name Wicked Annabella conjures up all sort of musical ideas, and it's kind of like really quite freely put together with some feedback and Bigsby arm and guitar, and it was a lot of fun to play. And the bridge was great, and I used to love singing it because it jumped into a slightly different key, and I was able to scream and shout it out, and I always thought Stevie Marriott would have done a great version of it. Yeah!
As well as strong characters and themes, the album contained a host of different genres and styles. This is typified most by the album's centrepiece, Big Sky, which was written while Ray and the band were at the Midem Music Trade Fair in Cannes, France.
It was written on the balcony of the Carlton Hotel, looking over the sea and the music biz hustlers below. I was in the middle of a lawsuit and one publisher took me over as a kind of a, to display me in front of the other publishers. I've got him signed, sort of thing. But I, Big Sky, it's the most religious song. And the one that I think really stood the test of time, the big riff, combined with a priest-like vocal.
Well, the first time I heard Big Sky, we were rehearsing in Ray's front room. We were practising the vocal parts on the, for the bridge. One day we'll be free, we won't care, just you wait and see. And that really affected me. When we got to do it in the studio, I could barely sing it without crying. And I thought, well, I better not cry, because that means I don't know how much time we got left in the studio. I have to redo it. It's very emotional. And it's an epic, although it's recorded in a very low-key way. It's an epic idea. Musically, it takes a different shift emotionally and quietens down for thought to manifest itself about it. And, you know, I think it's a really wonderful song. As I said, that bridge, and also there's, in all Kink's work, there's humour, accidental or deliberate, however you can get it, really. Because the funny, our humour kind of glues it together in some special little way. And I always thought, because Ray and I were really big fans of people like Burt Lancaster. He had a great way he talked and kind of raised... was a good mimic. It's a good mimic of people like Burt Lancaster and all kinds of people, Charlton Heston, and all these great influences. And the beginning of the vocal of Big Sky, it's like Ray kind of mimics Burt Lancaster a little bit. And it gives it a flavour of a bit of humour, like we were a private joke kind of vibe. You know? But it all goes towards making records. It's like a fantastic environment for self-expression.
The Kinks are the Village Green Preservation Society, demonstrated Ray Davies' ability to paint colourful and vibrant pictures with his lyrics and his music. As a result, the band produced a work that would define an era in British rock and roll. Coming up in this episode of Classic Album Club.
Success is in doing it. It destroys the creative vibe when you think, oh, blimey, people don't like it. What's wrong with it? There's nothing wrong with it. You've done it, you've achieved it, and you move on. Criticism can be really cruel.
I remember Kirsty came on stage with us when she sang Days, and we both cried on stage. How on rock and roll is that? It's an honour when people cover songs, you know, provided they add something of themselves to it, which Kirsty did.
You know, we're trusting each other. So, if Dave, you know, plugs into a funny amp and makes a noise, maybe he knows what he's doing. So me and Pete always had that trust that we'll try it. So what happens?
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Although the album is seen retrospectively as a classic work, at the time, it wasn't a big seller.
At the time, it wasn't popular because it wasn't the modern trend at the time. You know, because I was probably still into psychedelia or something. But with time, it, eventually people sort of rediscovered it and it's become popular again. If it hasn't got the immediate impact, it gets lost sometimes in the listening out for something that's currently popular, you know, and if it didn't fit in that bracket, it could get lost, you know. Ray would never go with a trend in it. He'd want to go with the way his emotions took him, you know, and he's not one for following trends. We always make albums that are contrary, should call ourselves contrary kinks. You think, well, you know, it's more special than I thought, you know. Often when you look back and you play some of the old tracks and they're really good, you know, and think, yeah, I wouldn't have minded being in that audience.
You try and do something to the best of what you think it should be, or, and then it's up to everybody else. But I think that success is in doing it. It destroys the creative vibe when you think, oh, blimey, people don't like that. What's wrong with it? There's nothing wrong with it. You've done it, you've achieved it, and you move on. Criticism can be really cruel.
I was disappointed. Again, the record company was signed to Pi Records were like the equivalent to an indie label, and they wanted singles. And I wanted to deliver something about a forgotten world, so it was strange, but it was victorious about the notoriety. In some ways it's almost too personal for the world to listen to at that time. I remember when I made Waterloo Sunset, I took it home and I said, I don't want anyone to hear it because it's my toy and I want to play with it. In America they used the anti-Vietnam War movement picked up on it. That's where the God Save the Kinks campaign came in, the Reprise Records. And if it was nothing, at least it was our nothing.
Despite being a commercial disappointment at the time, the Kinks' music from that era has rightly garnered a great deal of critical acclaim over the years, and some of the songs have taken on a life well beyond the album.
We played, they used to call it the Forum, Kirsty McGall got up and sang Days, and she was shaking. She said it was one of the most important events in her life. I thought, it's only a song. But actually, it was wonderful, a wonderful version of it.
I remember Kirsty came on stage with us when she sang Days, and we both cried on stage. How on rock and roll is that? But her version, I think produced by her then husband, Steve Lillywhite, this is a great version. It's an honour when people cover songs, you know. Provided they had something of themselves to it, which Kirsty did.
Days, to me, always is out there on its own. It's like nothing else. And I can't play it. I can't play it at all. It's too sad. And obviously, there were times when reminds me of when Pete was going through a lot of emotional turmoil and he wanted out and he wanted Pete Quaife, he wanted to leave the band. And I wasn't going to stand in his way. I always thought he knew what he was doing.
It wasn't intended to say goodbye to Pete. It was like an epitaph. And about our friendship and camaraderie. Because nobody told us how to do what we did. It's a more adult song. I should have written it now, when I'm much older. It's quite a difficult song for a young person to write.
The album Village Green proved to be something of a turning point for the Kinks, and soon after its release, bassist Pete Quaife and the band parted ways.
You know, we're trusting each other. So, if Dave, plugs into a funny amp and makes a noise, maybe he knows what he's doing. So me and Pete always had that trust that, well, try it. So, I think you know what you're doing, don't you? So that was an important element for us in the beginning, having the confidence and trust that you know what you're doing. I was a big Pete Quaife fan, and I thought if that's what he wants, maybe he knows more than what we know. So let him do. We weren't done yet by a long chalk, and maybe it's a good thing for him. How do we know till we do things? But it did affect me emotionally. And the Kinks did change around about that time. We got a keyboardist and for live playing, and we were starting to turn again in America, like with the Arthur album. And we were lucky. We had a really solid fan base in America that loved what we were doing and our music. And people liked it. It seemed real to them.
It's a testament to the hard work and to the band. I think it's a band record. It's one of the best band records the Kinks made at that time. Going back to the being the last album the original band made, yes, it's kind of closure. It's drawing a line under various points in my life. Again, marriage difficulties, lawsuits, and I hate to bring it up, but lack of money and lack of income because we couldn't tour in America. So, but draw a line, but turn it into a positive. You know, they can destroy my life, but they can't destroy my art. That's a very pompous thing to say, and I don't care.
The album's nostalgic themes and quirky characters remain vivid and meaningful, and its legacy continues to resonate.
Well, I think it's because it's very linked to our sense of well-being and survival. You know, maybe we've got these characters in our minds and hearts that we cherish and maybe make us feel better even though they're flawed. And it's usually because they're flawed. You know, we carry the past with us, whether we like it or not. And actually, most of the time, it's quite good to have those sort of memories. Sometimes we have regrets. But I think it's kind of like a celebration of small. You know, we became so drawn into this mechanized age and robotic age, and technology is moving so fast. We think we can keep up with it, but can we? You know, and I think it's like a bit of a plea to hang on, to slow down a bit. Maybe we've already got what we need. We just need to not be so immersed that we lose ourselves. You know, in our rush to get nowhere, which we might do, be careful, that we might forget where we came from or what we've already got.
Some of the songs have got different parts to them rather than, you know, the normal sort of verses and chorus and bridge and more light and shade. And, you know, you reflect on it and quite sort of caringly, really. Yeah, I think it was a good product at the time, and it stood the test of time. We just went with the music took us, really. And it was always, progressing and going somewhere.
I think because it sounds kind of, it's an un-rock and roll word, but honourable, there's kind of a samurai spirit to it, all die together. And it engages on several levels, apart from having quirky, singing about Desperate Dan, Donald Duck. There was a girl who had big lips who lived in the neighbourhood. We used to call her Donald Duck. So it's a childish form, but used to create honourable ideas. So it's that fine line between comedy and tragedy, which I quite like to walk the tightrope. It stands up as one of the top records of that period, this, made by the Kinks. We went on, when we got back to America eventually, we took a different turn in our music. But I think it summarises a point in our career very well. And a tribute to the original band.
Our thanks to Ray Davis, Dave Davis, and Mick Avery. I'm Mark Goodyear. You've been listening to Classic Album Club.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.